This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stachow. Gay couples in America who want to get married have to play a game of hopscotch to find the right place for their ceremony. There are only a handful of states that allow gay marriage, most of them clustered in the Northeast, but same-sex marriage is banned or illegal in nearly 30 states, and it's not addressed by the law in the rest of the states. Yet, according to recent polls, support for same-sex marriage is on the rise. Nearly 53% of Americans favor the right to marry for everyone. That's up from 42% 5 years ago. Sometimes the law lags behind public opinion in this country. Sometimes it gets ahead of it and brings people along. Civil rights for African Americans is an obvious example. So what will happen to same-sex marriage? Evan Wolfson and Michael Gerhardt are here today to ponder that question. Evan Wolfson is the founder and president of Freedom to Marry, and he is the author of the book Why Marriage Matters, America, Equality, and Gay People's Right to Marry. Michael Gerhardt is the Samuel Ash Distinguished Professor in Constitutional Law and the director of the Center for Law and Government at UNC Chapel Hill. Welcome to both of you. Good to have you here.
Thank you. Good to be here. Thank you.
Evan, let's start with why marriage is even advantageous or even desirable.
Mm-hmm. Well, marriage matters to people for a whole host of reasons. They're emotional as well as economic, practical as well as personal, social as well as spiritual, and reasons that resonate in love as they do in law. People want to get married because we all dream of finding someone who's going to put up with us, who's going to care for us, whom we can care for, and build a life with together. And that's the great dream, the great hope, one of the most important turning points that any person embraces in life. And we all know it doesn't always work out. It's not always perfect. Life is life. But it's what we dream of. And gay people share that dream, that aspiration, that desire for love, commitment, family, connectedness. And marriage is the vocabulary in our society and so many others in which we talk about these very deep aspirations of love and commitment and finding someone and connecting to someone and building a life with someone and building a family and families coming together to form a new, extended, broad family. This is what marriage does at its best, and it's what gay people dream of as non-gay people
well,
do.
Does marriage do that? Marriage is, as you say, vocabulary. That makes it a word. It's also a legal framework, but it isn't any of those other things. It isn't relationship. It isn't commitment. It isn't being together in a committed and loving way by itself.
There's always more to everything. There's the human experience. There's the work you have to do to make it work. There's the luck in bringing the right people together and having it sustained. There's the family and friends and children and extended connections that all form the life path you're part of. But marriage is the vocabulary, but I mean that in a very deep way, in which we talk about all those things, in which we experience all those things. And for example, in the introduction, you said gay people have to play hopscotch to find a place to have the ceremony. Well, you know, anyone who's ever been married, which I think is actually all of us in this room, actually knows it's not just about a ceremony. It's not just about one day. It's about a day-to-day lived experience. It's about dreams leading up to that day of getting married, and then it's everything you do to make it work, to fulfill it, to live it as you go forward. And so the marriage is what we in our society bring to all of that experience. And it's partly law. It's partly, for some people, religious. It's certainly familial. It's social. It's the way you interact with other people. And all of those things are why marriage matters. But what we're talking about here in North Carolina is the fact that gay people are excluded from that legal structure of support and connection and responsibility that binds a family, that brings tangible and intangible protections and responsibilities and connections to that family, that treats the family as a family, that does everything it can to reinforce the experiences that people are having.
So
gay people are denied that.
Are married people then privileged in this country, in this state?
Well, you could say in some ways, yes, married people are privileged. You could also say that most people aspire to do the work of marriage, to care for somebody, to commit to somebody, to build a life with someone, to put up with the ups and downs and not just walk at every moment. And the law reflects those desires and aspirations and hopes and dreams and the good that comes to the family, the unit, the extended family, and the community as people's commitment to one another is deepened and structured. And in that sense, the law is supporting and encouraging something that most of us view as a good.
Michael Gerhardt, talk about the law, particularly the Constitution. Is this a constitutional question when it comes to the right to marry in this country and who has that right?
Well, the short answer to that is yes. It's a constitutional question at both the federal level and the state level. So at the federal level, there are a few different issues will arise. One issue arises under what we call the Equal Protection Clause. Part of the 14th Amendment guarantees to every person the equal protection of the laws. And so one question becomes whether or not marriage restricted on a basis such as sexual orientation would pass muster under the Constitution. There's another question that's risen as well under the federal Constitution, and that has to do with the federal government's authority to be able to regulate marriage in any way. So, for example, in the Defense of Marriage Act, what's the authority the federal government's exercising when it passes a law like that that purportedly affects all the different states? And then at the state level, there, of course, are big questions, and that's why we're here today. I mean, the big questions about what the public policy will be for particular states on marriage.
When you talked about equal protection under the law, it seems to me that that is a way that bans on gay marriage could be challenged. Have they been challenged on those grounds? What have the courts said?
They have, and I think the rulings have actually sort of gone both ways. One of the more significant rulings is out of California, which struck down a California law which tried to restrict marriage. And it's probably making its way slowly but surely to the United States Supreme Court.
You know, the U.S. Supreme Court, at least 14 times going back decades, has held that the freedom to marry is a protected constitutional right, that it's something very central and important to people's aspirations. And in various cases, in various ways involving various groups of people, has struck down government restrictions on who could marry and interference in the choice to marry, saying this is a protected, important personal choice that belongs to Americans to make. The most famous of those cases is also the best named case ever, Loving versus Virginia, which struck down race restrictions on who could marry whom. But another case was in 1987, where the Supreme Court was faced with a case brought by a group of people challenging the government's refusal to allow them to marry. And the court had to analyze, in order to answer this question, what is marriage? And it looked to the attributes of marriage, and it talked about the importance of marriage as a public statement of commitment, as a gateway to tangible and intangible protections and responsibilities and some of the other aspects. And it said because marriage is so important, it cannot be arbitrarily denied even to that group of Americans that stood before the court in 1987. And that group then was prisoners. So the court said marriage is so important, a basic freedom, so protected under the Constitution that it can't be arbitrarily denied by the government even to convicted murderers.
So the courts have looked at who may and may not get married and to what extent the states have a right to weigh in and pass regulations. But what about the Constitution? The Constitution certainly doesn't say anything about who can and can't get married, right?
Well, it doesn't. It also doesn't say a lot of things specifically about most of the areas to which it applies. The Constitution speaks in generalities and broad outlines, to sort of quote Chief Justice John Marshall. So the question becomes, how do we interpret that broad language? For example, as Evan just mentioned, the right to marry, which is grounded in the Due Process Clause of the 14th Amendment, which protects people from having their life, liberty, or property deprived without due process of law. Equal Protection Clause, which I mentioned earlier, is broad language. And this broad language often invites the Supreme Court to try and interpret its sort of technicalities or its details or sort of figure out, okay, what's the meaning that's meant by that phrase? And so this is, the issue of marriage, of course, which has always been with us, is one that's going to affect, one's going to have a relationship really with all these different parts of the Constitution. And the question sooner or later for the Supreme Court will be, to what extent does it extend to this current circumstance?
And, you know, let's remember what a constitution is supposed to be. A constitution is to be a set of rules to provide a check on what the temporary elected officials who may be in office can do, because we believe as Americans that there are certain basic rights, basic freedoms that belong to all of us that the temporary occupants of a legislature or a governor's seat or the White House should not be able to take away arbitrarily. And so the Constitution is there to protect all of us. And when we tamper with it and try to put discrimination or carve-outs into it, it's terribly dangerous to our American system as well as to the individuals who are being targeted.
But that's why the opponents of gay marriage have put this on the ballot or tried to get this on the ballot in this state in May, a ban that would enshrine in the Constitution what is already in the legal code in the state of North Carolina, that is a ban on gay marriage. Does that make a difference? If there were a court challenge, Michael Gerhardt, would it be more difficult to challenge a constitutional amendment than it would a state law when it comes to, say, due process, denying due process?
I think the answer to that pretty clearly is no. I think any state action or any action by a state is still subject to the federal constitution, and it doesn't matter what you call that state action. An action in another very important case out of Colorado, Evans versus Romer, Supreme Court actually struck down an amendment to the Colorado Constitution, which had restricted certain freedoms to gays and lesbians.
What putting this discrimination into the North Carolina state constitution would do, however, is make it more difficult for North Carolina's own elected officials, the legislature, city officials, and so on, to start doing the right thing. It would prevent the next generation of North Carolinians from having their will heard, and it would force that decision into the hands of the federal courts.
For those who are not directly affected by a ban on gay marriage, what is there a price to pay for a passing an amendment that would ban gay marriage?
Yeah, well, first and foremost, this is about real families in North Carolina, and it is gay couples living here in Durham or Raleigh or Greensboro or any of the other towns and cities around the state. And couples who are raising kids here in this state, couples who are worrying about their aging parents, couples who are paying taxes, couples who are seeking to care for one another. And this is about discriminating against those families. It's not some freebie vote about how people feel about gays up in New York or over in California. This is about families right here in North Carolina. And of course, those families are composed not only of the gay couple, but of their parents and their siblings and their aunts and uncles and their friends and family and the children and they're raising. And many of those people, of course, are not gay. So this is about gay people, but it is also about non-gay people right here whose families will be weakened and undermined and hurt in a discriminatory way that helps no one. But it's also about the community and the state. What the record clearly shows is that communities and states that are welcoming, that encourage people to come and respect one another and say, look, we all may not agree on everything, but as Americans, we share this community, we share this space. Let's get the best of everybody's talent and contribution and make sure everyone's as well off as possible. Those are the ones that do better in the economy. Those are the ones that show better and more successful outcomes in bringing in business and retaining business and so on. So adopting this kind of discriminatory barrier would not only hurt real families, gay and non-gay, but would also hurt the community as a whole.
That's an important distinction, Michael, although a subtle one, it seems to me, that when you vote on an amendment like this, when you make a decision, you're not just expressing your opinion about whether or not you like gay marriage. You're making a fundamental change to the Constitution, which will have an impact on not only the law, but ultimately business. Is that right?
Yes. And it's very important to remember that when you amend the state constitution, you're not doing something just abstract. You're actually making policy that's going to apply as law to people's lives. And then the question becomes, what's the right thing to do? Even apart from whatever the federal constitution says, you know, the people in North Carolina have got to think about, okay, what is it? What's the proper thing to do here? What's the right thing to do? We can make that calculation here. Part of the answer, I think, is the interest that people have in regulating other people's lives. And I think that, you know, some people want to be able to micromanage how other people live their lives, and some people may want to simply make it more possible to live their lives more fully.
And, yeah. I'm sorry. Well, the other thing I would add is that this amendment is actually very, very broad. So it does two things. Number one, it bars gay people from ever having the freedom to marry in North Carolina and prevents the elected officials of this state and the next generation from having its voice heard on that important question. But beyond that, what it also does is prevent cities and the state legislature and others from providing these families any measure of legal protection in North Carolina, even apart from marriage, partnership laws, ability to make sure that the parents can care for their children, ability to care for one another in times of illness or death. And so this amendment is about denying marriage, but it's also, and more broadly, about denying any measure of family protection and sending that signal to the rest of the country that North Carolina does not respect families equally.
It might also be useful to remember that the state law of North Carolina already is restrictive, and that the proposed amendment, in a sense, kind of adds insult to injury because it's just simply trying to outlaw something that's already governed arguably by North Carolina law.
Yeah, and the argument is, and the thinking is, that the reason you might want to put this on the amendment would be to energize a base who might be opposed to this to gay marriage, so that you simply add to what already is there in the law. On the other hand, Evan, the polls show that there is growing support for gay marriage, or at least opposition to legal restriction to gay marriage. What do you think accounts for that?
Because I think the more people that have had a chance to talk about it over time and to hear about real families, stories of couples living here in the state and in the community, raising kids and dealing with life's ups and downs, the more they've been able to move beyond sort of stereotypes and scare tactics and uncertainties about abstractions and really talk about the impact on real people. And as they've done that and thought about their own values of treating others as you would want to be treated and respecting people's ability to make choices in life even if you don't agree with them and not using the government as a weapon against one another, Americans have moved and people have changed their minds. And so a lot of these anti-gay measures and the anti-gay amendments that were passed in several of these states as part of a political machine in earlier years moved forward before people had really had a chance to talk about what it means to deny people marriage, what it means to shut gay families out of any legal protection. If North Carolina now adopts this measure, it would be really sort of turning the clock back in a way that most of the country has moved ahead.
I want to thank both of you for being on the program today. Evan Wolfson, founder and president of Freedom to Marry and author of the book Why Marriage Matters, America, Equality, and Gay People's Right to Marry. He's going to take part in a panel discussion tonight at 7:30 at NC State. Michael Gerhardt is the Samuel Ash Distinguished Professor in Constitutional Law and Director of the Center for Law and Government at UNC Chapel Hill. I want to thank both of you for being on the program today.
Thank you, and I hope people will go to protectncfamilies.org to learn more.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to The State of Things. Our website is stateofthings.org, and our program is produced by Amber Nimix and Alex Granados. Robin Copley is the technical director, managing editor Lindsay Foster Thomas, and Susan Davis is our senior producer. This is North Carolina Public Radio, broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.